إلهي على
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد والثناء لله رب العالمين، طارئ الخلائق أجمعين، باعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد
وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المتجهين، لا سيما بقية الله في العالمين، روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. Listening will turn to our Imam recite Allah's salawat. Each and every one of us becomes a true companion of our Imam, recite the third one even louder.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Inshallah, we had said that we were going to talk about some of the verses of Surah Al-Mu'minun to benefit from and to try to balance between social political lives, the social political aspect of religion, which is going to manifest itself more so than today when the Imam of our time arrives. But we need to prepare ourselves, but we said we need to balance that with spirituality, and that's why we begun this. But before I continue with that, since tonight is, at least according to some, the night of the Eid, and inshallah, at least for this community, there's going to be announcements, and I don't want to create any kind of confusion by expressing what I have in mind in regards to that. It will be inshallah announced. However, there's a couple of points in regards to Eid, the beginning and the end of the month, that we have to make clear, and I think this is the best opportunity that I will get, since a lot of us have this issue on their minds. Sometimes, and I think we had this in one of those sessions that we talked about, the social political lives, there's a concept called unity. Recite salawat, please.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم واعتصموا بحبل الله جميعا ولا تفرقوا. Unity is a concept that is considered a value amongst believers, and we've got to go out of our way, sometimes take hardships, difficulties, to make sure we preserve that unity. One of the lines that Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi has said to have said in regards to why he didn't stand up after the event of Saqifa was that he said, I have to say to the Holy Prophet as Harun said to Prophet Musa ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhim as-salam, that when he went to the mountain of Tur and he received the revelation, the people started, some of them at least, started following and started worshipping that calf, that artificial calf, and Harun was left alone. He didn't have any supporters, so he remained silent. When his brother came, Prophet Musa, he asked why. Prophet Harun, because he's a prophet, said, because I was afraid that you would tell me why did you create division amongst Bani Israel. The same thing has been reported from Amir al-Mu'mineen, and he has made a reference to that story. Sometimes you have to go out of your way. Sometimes you have to take pain for that. Sometimes you have to even remain silent and not say and not insist on part of the truth to make sure we are able to maintain most of the truth. Because sometimes if you want to stress too much and put pressure too much on some of those little details there, you're going to lose the whole plot. Now, this important concept of unity, which is so important, as we said, we need to sacrifice certain other principles for, we manage to sometimes, and somehow, we manage to use this concept of unity where we're not supposed to, and when we are supposed to be united, we don't sacrifice what we need to. For example, one of the... I think I need to say this, that actually the concept of unity and pushing for that has created division in this particular case. We don't talk about unity except when it comes to the month of Ramadan, and we want to say that why can't we unify on one day of Eid? Why can't we be united and have one day of Eid? Unity is great, but out of all the issues and all the differences, we choose this one to say we need to be united on. This needs a little bit of clarification. We are saying, actually, we are united on a principle that was given to us by the Ahlul Bayt, based on which this difference is not only justified, we have got to have this difference. How so? The Ahlul Bayt salamullah alayhim ajma'in taught their students, taught their companions to be scholars. They gave them the knowledge and they gave them the liberty to understand these statements, the words of the Ahlul Bayt that were recorded, and they transmitted them to one another, understand them, and based on their understanding, provide that information to others. They would even refer the rest of the companions, some of the ones that were less knowledgeable, to these scholars that they trained. At the very time of the Ahlul Bayt, during their lifetime, there were differences of understanding amongst these scholars that were taught by the Ahlul Bayt, based on the teachings of the Qur'an and the Ahlul Bayt themselves. There were differences of opinion. Nevertheless, the Ahlul Bayt emphasized for the others to go and refer to these people. They even had not only difference of opinion on issues related to practical laws, which are considered the furu', they are the branches, they had difference of opinion on issues related to aqa'id, to our beliefs. Some of them, which the Ahlul Bayt actually referred people, we have reports on this, referred people to this individual, Zurarah ibn Ayyan ibn Sunsun. This person, a great companion of Imam al-Baqir and Imam al-Sadiq, salamullah alayhima.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
He has a heated debate with Imam al-Sadiq about whether or not those who don't believe in the concept of wilaya are kafir, something that's going on or has been going on amongst us as well. And the Imam in this report, which has been narrated twice in Al-Kafi and once in Al-Kashi, the Imam insists to Zurarah that the majority of Ahlul Sunnah are not kafir, and he keeps saying that they are kafir. And then at the end, the Imam, according to some of those reports, tell him, إِذَا كَبُرْتَ. Once you grow up, right now your mind is still the mind of a child. Okay, you don't understand yet. Once you grow up, then you can do that. Not that he was physically still a child, no. He was a grown man. He was a companion of Imam al-Baqir and Imam al-Sadiq. This is apparently at the time of Imam al-Sadiq. He's a grown man, but his understanding is limited. They had difference of opinion and understanding these things. Much less the practical laws, and there's plenty of ahadith that there were differences about the practical laws. One example that I can mention is about the nijasa of alcohol. There were different opinions there. Of course, the source of it is different reports of the Ahlul Bayt, but nevertheless, the companions had different opinions regarding that. This existed in the Ahlul Bayt, not only didn't prohibit this and tell people, no, you're not supposed to do that. Don't ask these people. You're just supposed to strictly go and read these ahadith. And whatever your understanding is, that's it. You cannot go and listen to this person and ask him for practical laws. This leads to, when in the presence of the ma'sumin, it causes difference of opinion. In the absence of the ma'sumin, it definitely causes difference of opinion. And these differences of opinion exist. The dispute about the beginning of the month of Ramadan or the month of Shawwal, which is Eid, some people have a misunderstanding regarding that and what it's all about. Some people think we can't figure out whether we saw the moon or we didn't. Well, the moon is there. It's either visible or it's not. It's not a big issue, right? It's not a serious issue. You can use the devices that you have. The information is there where exactly it is, and you can take a look and see if you can see it or not. They're not considering one another liars or the sources that they trusted as liars and so on and so forth. That's not the point. The difference of opinion is regarding understanding the sources on two issues. One issue is what needs to be seen. What is the extent of what needs to be seen, or more accurately may be said, is that what constitutes the beginning of the month of Ramadan, or any month, any lunar month? Is it the crescent in and of itself, whether we see it or not? Which some believe. For example, Sayyid Fadlullah, and Allah bless his soul, he believed if there's enough of a crescent that can possibly be seen, that's enough. That's why he announced Eid, and he announced the beginning of the month of Ramadan a few days or maybe even weeks in advance, because the information was there. Many of the other maraja, I think almost I can say all of the others, believe that no, the possibility is not enough. This is based on understanding hadith. Based on understanding the verses of the Holy Qur'an. They say that it needs to be visible. Okay, how visible? Well, some say it needs to be seen with the naked eye. Based on hadith. Like back then, that's what they used to see. That's what they used to consider the beginning and the end of the month. Others say no. Just because they didn't have the devices to be able to see the moon with optical aid the way we do today doesn't mean that they wouldn't have used it if they didn't have it back then. It says you need to see it. Okay, there's no difference between seeing it with optical aid or seeing it with the naked eye. Once you've seen it, you've seen it. It says, صُمْ لِلْرُؤْيَةِ وَأَفْطِرْ لِلْرُؤْيَةِ. When you see the moon, start fasting. When you see it again, stop fasting. These are two different understandings. Each of them has got its own backing, its own support, its own strong explanations, and others would differ with that, and they would say for a few reasons they would disagree with that, and this is absolutely fine. Another area of difference of opinion is that if it's seen in one location, is it going to count for any other location, or every city or every village has got to sight the moon themselves? It's clear that it's not such that every single city or every locality within a city has got to see the moon themselves, otherwise it's not going to count for them. It is a little more broad than that, but then what is it? What's the criterion? There's a list of differences of opinion on that based on the understanding from the Quran and Hadith. Some say that as long as during that night which the moon is sighted, okay, where it is cited, another location, the second location that you are trying to figure out whether it's the beginning of the month or not, if they share part of the night with the city or the country that the moon was seen in, then it counts for them. This is Abdullah Khuy, may Allah bless his soul, that's his view. And Sayyid Fadlullah, may Allah bless his soul, he also had that view. So if the possibility, according to Sayyid Fadlullah, was there to sight the moon in South America, that would be enough for him to consider it the beginning of the month or the end of the month in Lebanon, because they share the night. Part. Ayatollah Wahid Khorasani, he has a similar view, slightly different. This is their understanding, sharing the night. Ayatollah Khamenei and Ayatollah Sistani disagree with that, and they have a different explanation, which these two marjas agree on what that description, what that explanation is. And that is, they say, because sighting the moon is necessary, the only way that it would count for a second place without seeing it, where you are and you have not seen it because of clouds, like tonight in Toronto, or this evening in Toronto, there were clouds in the horizon. You couldn't see whether the moon is there or not. However, if based on scientific calculations, when you compare the probability of sighting the moon in both these two locations, one, it is clear they did see the moon. The second, we are wondering whether it is aid or not. Say, if when you weigh the possibilities, they seem to be the same, or in this other location, for example, Toronto, the probability of sighting the moon is even more than the original location, which is Iran or Iraq, then it's definitely going to count for the second location as well. It doesn't matter if they are on the same longitude or they are not. They could be on different longitudes. Or if they're on the same latitude or not, they don't have to be. You have got to check the factors. The factors that are involved are the aging of the moon, which means how thick the crescent is going to be. The thicker it is, the more visible it is. Based on that, if they've seen it in a location, if you move eastward, the possibility of seeing the moon becomes more slim. Okay, so east or a location will not count for its eastern neighbors if they are too far east. But for the west, it becomes thicker. However, when you start moving up north, because the moon starts being visible or it starts to fall lower in the horizon, according to when you look from the earth from northern regions, at least in this season, because of that, the possibility of sighting the moon when you move a little further north becomes a little dimmer. But putting all of those circumstances together, you can come up with the understanding of what it is. And to get an idea, you can refer to a site called Moon Sighting, and you can look at the charts that they have there. I'm not saying whether that is 100% accurate or not. At least you get an idea what it means, that if they see it in a region compared to another region, you can make a little comparison there. So according to their view, this is their understanding, that if they see it in one location, these are the areas that it will count for. We have got to, based on the sayings of the Ahlul Bayt, based on their teachings, we have got to refer to the person that, based on our research, is the most knowledgeable and follow that. And if we don't, we haven't done our responsibility. If we want to say we want to unite and have one Eid, we haven't followed our responsibility. We've got to go and search, see which one is the most, or which one is the one with the qualifications, follow that, whatever their view is on Eid or the beginning of the month, you have got to follow that. If you go with another day, it's not going to work. If that day is actually Eid, and you fast on that day because you wanted to unite, that's haram, it's a sin, you can't do that. But if it was actually Eid, and you fasted because the fatwa of your marja, on the day of judgment, you'll have an excuse. You told me take this path, I did. That's why I fasted on that. Alright. This is, we are united on this principle. If we want to screw this up, then that is going to tear apart all of our religion and the whole practice, and we are going to be split into more than 72 nations. So it's very important for us to understand that. Now, the only other thing is, sometimes, unfortunately, what happens is that the differences in when the Eid is because we, the followers of the Maraja, whether we are the commoners or the laymen in terms of Islam, or we are sometimes people that are supposedly, or they should have studied. Unfortunately, sometimes we don't know what that fatwa is. We start speculating. And then rumors start to go around. Tomorrow is Eid, it isn't Eid, emails start going around. Why did he say this? Why did they say that? This, that, the other. Well, I'm sorry. Pick up the fatwa book of your marja. If you don't have the knowledge to even understand that, then go and study with a scholar to be sure you've had a correct understanding of that. And then things would be a little more clear. Stop jumping to conclusion based on hearsay and speculation and ignorance. That form of division, that is problematic. It is problematic that the followers of one marja that is supposed to be following one fatwa are having difference of opinion in one city. This is because of us. This is where the ignorance comes in. If we try to remove that ignorance, and sometimes ego, God forbid, try to remove that, inshallah, we'll be able to be united on that principle and fulfill our responsibility. Recite the salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa alihi Muhammad.
We had said that the reason why we chose Suratul Mu'minun is because this surah, at the beginning of it, describes to us what a believer should be like. And we said this is not just a regular believer. This is where we should be aiming at, to arrive at. We need to look at this guideline, look at where we need to be, and gradually start moving in that direction. If we don't know where we're supposed to be, if we don't hear what we are supposed to be, we think, okay, we're doing our responsibilities and that's pretty much it. No, there are things, there are goals, there are destinations to reach that many of us have no clue. And what this surah helps us with is to get some practical instructions on what to do as well. The surah began, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. قَدْ أَفْلَحَ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ الَّذِينَ هُمْ فِي صَلَاتِهِمْ خَاشِعُونَ, which we try to our limited ability, describe and discuss and talk about last night. The verse that we want to discuss a little bit and try to have a better understanding of is the next verse, which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, الَّذِينَ هُمْ عَنِ اللَّغْوِ مُؤْرِضُونَ. We need to understand two words here. It says they are the ones that, it says, عَنِ اللَّغْوِ مُؤْرِضُونَ. What does لَغْوُ mean and what does إِعْرَاض mean? What does it mean that they are مُؤْرِضُونَ? What does the word لَغْوُ mean? I want to draw a comparison between two words that are similar and sometimes people mistake them. There's a word that we just said, لَغْوُ. There's a similar one that is لَهْوُ. But the meaning of it is very different. This word and this concept that is mentioned in this verse has been mentioned a couple of other times in the Holy Quran as well. For example, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَإِذَا مَرُّوا بِاللَّهُ مَرُّوا كِرَامًا. I'll just put a plug in a word there before we explain the concept of what لَهُ is. We'll plug in just one word to get a translation of this. إِذَا مَرُّوا بِاللَّهُ مَرُّوا كِرَامًا. Again, that's describing the believers. When they come across لَهُ, useless activities, wasteful activities, it's something that is not beneficial, مَرُّوا كِرَامًا. They pass by it with power and strength and with dignity. إِذَا مَرُّوا بِاللَّهُ مَرُّوا كِرَامًا. Another verse that we find this is where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَإِذَا سَمِعُوا اللَّهُ أَعْرَضُوا عَنْهُ وَقَالُوا لَنَا أَعْمَالُنَا وَلَكُمْ أَعْمَالُكُمْ. When they hear useless words, conversations that are not beneficial, they tell the people, look, we don't want to be part of this, see you later. لَنَا أَعْمَالُنَا وَلَكُمْ أَعْمَالُكُمْ لَنَا أَعْمَالُنَا وَلَكُمْ أَعْمَالُكُمْ. We have our actions and you have yours. So, the concept of لَغْو, what does this mean? Many of the spiritual teachers tell us, when you go and ask for advice, is what to do to get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. First, they start with telling you, you need to perform all your obligations, do all your wajibat, make sure you avoid all of your muharramat. Then, when you stick around a little longer, they start giving you a third thing as well. Not that you've reached anything, but you just start hearing it. You just start hearing it. And what is that? They say you need to avoid lahu. You need to stay away from activities that don't have any benefit. Why? We'll try to explain. But first, what does useless activity mean? They say, this particular alim that I'm thinking of, a spiritual trainer and teacher. He says, whatever doesn't have any benefit for this dunya or the hereafter is something you need to avoid. The Allama Tawatawai had a very interesting and more in-depth explanation of that. He says, look, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala who's created us in this world, He has created us with certain desires, certain tendencies, certain drives. Certain things attract us. We want to move towards them. We desire them. We like them. For example, if you see a tinny sign, you get tempted to go and get, I don't know, hot chocolate or coffee or what is the other stuff? Iced coffee or whatever else that they have there. I get the hot stuff, so I don't know what the cold stuff is. Okay. Or the Timbits or whatever. Okay. You're tempted. Why? You have a desire. We have this desire, we have these taste buds that feel these goodies, okay? And when we are reminded of that, when we're passing by, then that temptation comes, especially when you're fasting, you pass by the snack section in the department store or the grocery store or whatever, you want to pick up some stuff. That's why my mom always told my dad, don't ever go shopping on an empty stomach. Okay, because you end up buying 10 times more than what we need. You see these things, you get tempted. Why? Because you have these desires. When it comes to other desires, for example, the sexual desire, this is a desire that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has put into us. The genders are attracted to one another. This is the fact of how we are. We've been created like that. That's why schools have got to be segregated. You can't have youth, okay, together because it's going to be a disaster, especially if it's not controlled. And that's why it's so corrupt here. The age that people should be moving towards Allah, it's the prime of their spirituality, since it's the prime of the sexual desire as well, you see them forgetting about the spirituality and instead getting involved with all kinds of stuff. And they get involved with it because it's a very, very strong desire. We have the desire to own things. We have the desire to have belongings. And once we start growing older, we want more and more of that. And we want to constantly and continuously add on to what we have. We have two pairs of shoes, we go and see a nicer one, we want to buy those as well. Or a new pair are out, I don't know what the basketball players these days are, but the Air Jordans were the ones that at those times people used to buy. I don't know if they still buy that stuff or there's other stuff. Or anyhow, new shoes come out, there's a hype there, you want to have it. You have plenty of shoes. Sometimes you open up that closet, there's 20 pairs, and they're going to the store to buy another pair. Okay. There's a desire to have more. There's a desire when we see beautiful things, attractive things, we want to have them. This desire is there. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has put it in us. Owning more. Sometimes you see families, they have maybe a couple of children. Alright? Two parents. Husband and a wife, and a couple of children, they can have an apartment or a townhouse or a single house that has a few rooms, a couple of bathrooms, and that suffices. Even if it's less than that, it should suffice. But you see them, they have this huge mansion with 20 rooms and 8 bathrooms. Who's going to use that? Okay. The desire to want more is there. There's a desire there. Okay. And plenty of other desires that we can go on giving examples of. Now, these desires that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala put in us, He didn't put it in us for no reason. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is all wise. Anything that He creates, anything that He does, is for a reason. These desires that we have, these material desires, because some of the inclinations that we have are spiritual. I think those are pretty clear. Like, sometimes you get that spiritual urge and the fervor to go for ziyarat. You just remember Imam Hussein, you just start crying, you want to go there. You hear about Baqi, your heart is there. You want to try to figure out if there's a tour that you can afford to go for ziyarat there, for umrah or whatever else, for hajj inshallah. Those, it's pretty clear why they're there. But material desires, what's the purpose behind it? Because we have a material body, that's part of us, and this material existence of us has got needs. In order for these needs to be fulfilled, in order for us to take care of these needs, we need to have these desires. It needs to taste good. There's two feelings you get that are related to food. One is hunger. If you never felt hungry, what would happen? You would die. You wouldn't start eating, you would die. Of course, since there's all these goodies that taste good, even if you don't feel hungry, you want to eat. That's what a lot of times we do. That's why we have the problem of obesity in these countries. Okay. Even when we're not hungry, we want to eat. So one thing is the feeling of hunger, the other is the taste buds. Desiring to eat, the want to eat. If it was just the pain, you would just eat enough for that pain to be removed. And every few minutes, you get hungry again, you have to eat. You get hungry again, have to eat. But then with this desire, when you sit there, you've got to eat 3-4 plates. And sometimes somebody's got to come and tell you, look brother, there's a funny saying in Farsi, well, actually translating it, you know, somebody's saying when you translate it, it just doesn't make sense in another language, so I'll just leave that. Anyhow, so sometimes you need to stop the person. They eat too much. But the desire is there for a purpose. You have this need. Your body needs food. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given you this desire for that. The desire to be with the opposite gender, in order for human beings to exist on the face of the earth, in order for there to be more human beings brought into this world, there needs to be an attraction that glues couples together. Otherwise, people would not live together. Right. A man and a woman would not live together. This is, the attraction is there. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has put it there. And it's a very strong glue. Without this, family would definitely fall apart. And there would be no children. There would be no children. With all the headaches that people go through after the child is born, you have one of those experiences like never ever again. People who have children know what I'm talking about. Okay, when you start having children, you have the first one, when you remember those pains and difficulties, like never again. Alright? But there's two things that are there. One is that sexual desire. The other is the love for children. Most women at least have that. These days, of course, unfortunately, things are changing. Okay. They like to see them and say, oh, that's cute, and pull their cheeks, but they don't want to have their own children. That's very unfortunate. In Islam, we have the concept and the idea of having children. There's so many hadith about the Holy Prophet saying that bring as many children as you can, as many as you can. One of the qualities that you need to look for in a spouse, okay, and the sister that you would want to marry, is to see if that family, or that tribe for the Arabs, were those who had, were capable of bearing more children. Walud, that's the word that is used. Plenty of hadith, I don't want to get into that. Alright? Because of that, you have this desire. And of course, there's other things involved here regarding that desire, which I wish we had another session where we could discuss that. One of the ulama, I said this, and I'm not going to mention his name. There's two alims, two scholars in Qom. One of them is an ayatullah, a very well-known person. I'm not going to name him, and I'm not going to name the other scholar who was the student. But I'm going to tell you the conversation. The teacher, the ayatullah, told his student that I wish you would write a book on sexuality in Islam, okay, and have lessons on that, And this would be benefiting the Muslim Ummah. And the student said, I have a little bit of respect amongst people. You want to take that away from me by writing this book? And that's a problem. You can't talk about that stuff. People start saying, we had a session somewhere, and I was just trying to talk about how severe the punishment of certain sins are, and I used the words adultery and homosexuality. Some people wanted to kill me. Said, why are you saying this to our children around? I'm like, look, if your child is here in the U.S., I'm sure they've heard some things that are 10 times worse than that. Okay. And plus, this is a word in the Holy Quran and so on and so forth. Anyway, these are misunderstandings that we have. So, I wish I could expand on that, but not for this session. So we have these needs because of which, in order to for us to take care of these needs, these desires are put into us. Alright? However, these desires, these strong desires that are there for a very good purpose, have got to be controlled. Beyond a certain level is going to be transgression. It's crossing a red line. This has been put there within these boundaries, within a marriage, which is one of the following verses in this surah. The believers are those who refrain from sexual activity except for with their wives and with slaves, which is its own explanation and discussion. Wives, permanent or temporary. That's what the verse is. It's got to be within this boundary. Outside of it, it's not allowed, and in this, within this boundary, it's an ibadah. It's there for a reason. Eating, there's a certain limit that you have, certain things that you need to avoid. If you desire those taste buds, think that this tastes so good, you want to have it, it's bacon, it tastes great, which I don't know how it tastes, of course, we haven't tasted that stuff. What they have is fake bacon that they sell. I don't know how similar it is, but anyway, we haven't tasted it. So no matter how delicious that is, you've got to avoid it. You can't have that stuff. And also the amount you eat and so on and so forth. On what you own, how you own it, what you spend your money on, and so on and so forth. All these have got limitations. Now, those limitations, the boundaries that are put there, is where that form of usage of this desire is harmful to you. And anything that is not harmful, you're allowed to fulfill that desire. It's up to you. Now, this is where we get to the word lahu. Amongst the mubah things, amongst the halal things, amongst things that are not sins, we desire to do certain things. For example, I just had breakfast. 2 hours later, I see Timmy's, I go and grab some Timbits. Okay. With a coffee or hot chocolate or one of those cold drinks. Alright? I go and pick it up. I'm not hungry. I pick it up and eat it. I'm not overeating to an extent that would be haram. And I haven't picked up anything haram. Right? So this is mubah. It's Allah. If you ask the spiritual training, is this something wrong to do? Say, well, is it haram? Check your mom just beside it. It says, no, it's not haram. Can you have it? Yeah, you can have it. But lahu means if there's something that's not beneficial for the hereafter, let me explain that a bit. Anything that we have in this world is either beneficial for the hereafter, harmful for our hereafter, or doesn't really make too much of it. That's not going to harm or benefit. We've been put here, it says the believers are those who out of these choices, not only do they refrain from the muharramat, they also don't have time to cater to their desires where it does not benefit for the hereafter. That's why it says, وَإِذَا مَرُّوا بِاللَّهُ مَرُّوا كِرَامًا. They have that kirama. They're more dignified to be wasting their time if it's wasting time. Sometimes we're wasting our time. On what? Useless conversations. Hours and hours and hours. Did it help you spiritually? No. Inshallah, it didn't harm you. Because when you allow that tongue to just keep going for hours, whether it's brothers or sisters, you're going to get into a lot of things that you're not supposed to. You start cracking jokes about things you're not supposed to. You start entering dangerous waters. And a lot of times we end up committing that sin. But even if it's not that sin, after a few hours, look back. Can you even trace back what all you guys talked about? What was the point of this whole conversation? 2 hours that could have been used to worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala one way or the other was wasted. That desire to have a conversation with a brother or sister. By the way, I should say, it's not wrong to socialize. It's not useless to socialize with brothers and sisters. In Islam, of course, brothers with brothers, sisters with sisters. Unless they're mahram, obviously, inshallah. There's benefit in that. We have so many hadith about getting together and all of that. But there's a time frame with that. If you go on for hours and hours and hours and there's no point in that conversation, then no, that's not something that is going to be beneficial. Sometimes we waste our time on things that some of us consider a waste of time. In reality, it is harmful. But at the very least, it's a waste of time, which is very common. Examples, video games. All the young guys, you love those video games. I'm sure of it. I don't know what you have. Back in those days, they had Mortal Kombat that was very famous. I don't know if you have that, new versions or whatever you have these days. Plenty of new games, I'm sure. Some of them, unfortunately, very sinful. Something here?
Yeah.
It's crawling with insects here, guys. Okay. Recite the salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Video games, all sorts of them. Cartoons, different channels have different ones. If you got cable, you got access to loads more. And there's plenty of CDs and DVDs, and there's plenty of stuff online. Internet itself, sometimes you go for hours facing and having useless conversations or putting up pictures that inshallah are the halal ones, even. Inshallah are the halal ones, not the haram ones. Video games, cartoons, movies. Look, these movies, that's why I mentioned two concepts. One is lahu, the other one is lahu. The difference between the two, I explain what lahu is. It's something that's not beneficial for the hereafter. Lahu is something that keeps your mind occupied even when you're not busy with that and does not allow you to focus on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and spirituality. These movies and cartoons have this effect. Video games have that effect. They make a person irresponsible. Why do you think the new generation is being more and more irresponsible? They're not growing up. People that are supposed to have been responsible at ages of 12, 13, 14, 15, they're not responsible even when they're 22 or 23. They get married for whatever reason, and they're very irresponsible. And the marriage ends in divorce. Why is that? Well, because we gave them the tools to make themselves irresponsible. This is lahawa. It moves us away from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Even if it doesn't have any sin, it keeps your mind occupied. Hours and hours of playing those games, brothers and sisters. Look, we don't need to have this form of entertainment. Islam is not against entertaining yourself. Of course, a believer, that's what we're reading here, a believer, what we need to think that that is our goal, that's our objective, that's our salvation, that's our prosperity, says that they don't have time for these forms of entertainment because they're so entertained with God, they enjoy that so much, they don't have time to waste on these things. I don't know if you've experienced, if you have like the most amazing video game that you've seen in your life and you're 20, some of these gamers, okay, and then somebody shows you Super Mario Brothers, okay, and you're like, man, give me a break. What is that compared to this? And that child is enjoying that so much and they have no clue what this is. Well, all of that is so childish, brothers and sisters, no matter what the game is. Because what you would be enjoying with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is far beyond that. You just haven't experienced that. And the reason why we can't experience that are these obstacles. For parents, if you want to be good to your children, try to find forms of entertainment and fun that are not harmful for your child. Don't think that these are okay. No. A lot of these games have sins in them. They will attract us towards sin. And those that don't have the effect of keeping us in our mindset as a child. Everything is considered a game. We're very irresponsible. There's always a reset button. And if it didn't work, I don't know if the Xboxes and PlayStations and all of that stuff, if they have this or not, but when it didn't work, sometimes you have to unplug it or just bang it against the wall, sometimes the older versions. There's always a reset button. Anytime you get tired, reset. In life, there's no reset button, brothers and sisters. You gotta tough it out. You reach a part where you think you can't win, you have to learn how to manage that. Games don't teach you that. Cartoons don't teach you that. It's a fact.